Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your meeting, your recovery tonight. It's good to see folks. I got a few folks on here that we'd probably be better off if a couple of them would take their picture off the page, but I'll do some open-mindedness tonight. Good to see them. I've made a lot of meetings with Henry and a lot of meetings with David. And probably made a few meetings with some of the rest of you because I've made conferences and things in your area. I am an alcoholic. My name is Gary Kincaid, and I am really, really, really grateful for a sobriety date and for a new life. Mine started July 25th of 1994. Started out in West Texas, Odessa. And today I live in a little town east of Dallas, Sulphur Springs, Texas. Sulphur Springs was never on my radar to be a place to retire to, but however, it happens to be where both my children and my granddaughter reside. And by the grace of God, through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, those two children that I had abandoned in my alcoholism long ago made it known that this is where they wanted me to be when I did retire. I'll be forever grateful for that. The thing I think about, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I hear stories in my home group, I hear speakers, each of you think about your story. We have stories that Hallmark would not make a movie out of. They would say nobody's going to believe that. And yet, if you and I, or at least if I am not real careful, I can start to take that for granted from time to time. But look around this screen today, and the next time you're in a meeting, we are in a room full of people that really Hallmark wouldn't touch. They'd say nobody's going to believe that. If you're new here, you may not believe that either, but I assure you that if you'll come all the way in and sit all the way down and stay, hang on, you're in for the ride of your life. Someday you will even repeat what I'm fixing to say to you now, even though if you're new, you think it's the furthest thing that you could ever believe. I am so grateful that I'm an alcoholic, I can't hardly stand it. If I were not an alcoholic who had found recovery in AA, I'd still be the zero that I was. And that zero that I was not just because I drank. I cannot blame my life on drinking. Drinking did not make me lie. Drinking did not make me cheat. Drinking did not make me act as though I were the center of the universe. There was a lot of stuff wrong with me when I got here that I didn't know anything about. But I hope I can share with you if you're new. To my great surprise, I got to discover that I do not suffer from the illness of alcohol. I suffer from the illness of alcoholism. And the only place in the world that's going to understand that, in my experience, is going to be us. One of the very first things that I was told when I got here was to keep my mouth off the people I love. My first sponsor said, "Don't go out and start telling them you're in AA and you don't drink anymore and you're," he said, "keep your mouth off of them. They've already heard everything they ever need to hear from you. They need to see something different. And it's liable to take a long, long time." And I share with people today that sponsor died before he could tell me that I ever had permission to put my mouth back on the people I love. So I've just had to follow that instruction for 29 and a half years now. I've never gotten in trouble for anything I didn't say. And y'all have taught me to, I can't do it all the time, but I can keep my mouth shut a great deal of the time. Now, part of what I didn't know, and I should have known this, I always say this on Zoom talks. I'm in this little room of mine, and I've got a wall right in front of me. And if I had them, I could line up college diplomas, including advanced degrees, and it'd cover about a third of the wall. I could add license and certifications for careers, and it'd cover up a great deal of the wall. And if I added marriage license, I'd have the whole wall full. Now, all that means today is this. You could put a big X over each one of those. And the way I would describe it would be fired, 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 fired. I had all of that. And when I got here, I had none of that. And that's important to me because when I did get brought to my first meeting on Monday, July 25th of 1994, more than anything in the world on that day, I wanted to not drink. That had not always been the case. It had been the case the last 3 years. And those of you who have advanced in your alcoholism know that one of the most mentally debilitating things about alcoholism is drinking when you don't want to drink. But when I got brought there that day, and I didn't come to AA, I got brought to AA. I always say when I share, you'll hear in meetings, if you're new, people will say, I didn't have to come here, I volunteered. And I want to tell you, there are no volunteers for AA. Our egos die a very hard death. We still want to separate ourselves like we volunteered for this. Nobody came to Alcoholics Anonymous looking for what we have. How in the world can any of us look for what we have until we have it? We wouldn't have known what we were looking for. I never met anybody that came into AA looking for what we had. I meet most of them who came the way I did, running away from what had me. And I wanted to not drink, but I did not believe that that would be possible. Now, I stayed out there long enough. I didn't have the DTs my first 20 years of drinking. I had them the last 7. And I don't remember much of my first 4 or 5 days. I found out more about it later on. All I'll say is the guy who was going to become my first sponsor assigned a gaggle of his pigeons to me, and I was never alone during that time. While I was detoxing and chasing camels and giraffes, I remember a little bit of that. Crazy as a bed bug, and I found out y'all like us better that way. Those guys were with me all the time, and they were taking me to 2 or 3 meetings. I was crazy as hell, and I found out y'all like us better that way. I love it today when I'm in a meeting and someone detoxing or someone still drinking comes into the meeting because that's me. And that could be me again if not for the grace of God through this program. But I got this old boy to be my sponsor, not because I wanted to, but because a couple of those guys, his pigeons, were telling me I needed to get a sponsor and they told me to ask him, and I did. And I hope all of you get to be sponsored in a similar fashion that I did. What I remember is Jerry took me. I didn't have an automobile that ran at that time. He picked me up, and the first time we went to a restaurant, we ate, he paid, and we visited for, seemed like a couple hours. And then he took me to his home the next time. Beautiful home. We visited again, and he asked me questions about me. He got all the information he could get. He listened to me intently. And the man never listened to me again for the rest of the time after that. I found out he remembered everything I said, and from then on, he used that against me. But he was not very interested in listening to me, trying to tell him what my problems were and what was wrong with me. And even though I wanted to not drink more than anything, very quickly, and all of you who've been here for a while remember this, and those of you who are brand new may be going through this. But very quickly, the squirrel cage gets to run it. And I began to think about all my troubles. I began to think about the legal problems. I began to think about the IRS that just put me on their amends list. I hadn't filed in the previous 8 years. I thought all the time about those children, their twins, a son and a daughter, what I had done to them. I'd look up on the wall in my dirty little house and see the photograph of my mom and stepdad who had been killed by a drunk driver in 1988. And at that military funeral at Fort Sam, Dema's son is the only one there out of the hundreds of people who's drunk and who actually falls out of my chair at graveside at the 21-gun salute, blowing snot and slobbering. And it really wasn't over grief about my mother. It was over me. And how am I going to make it now? I couldn't get those thoughts out of my mind. I'm going through another divorce. And I remember about the third or fourth time we talked, and please, new people, hear this. I began to mention to Jerry about that divorce, about those children, about no money, about that truck, about the IRS. And he let me know very quickly, Gary, those are not problems. And I thought the man didn't hear me. He said, those are not problems. Those are consequences. Your entire life, you've always been trying to fix the consequences. And you've never known the problem that keeps spewing them out. And at that time, I thought the problem was alcohol. After all, haven't all of you heard that your entire life? People saying, if you just wouldn't drink, then everything would be different. Now, over the years, they had added some things, but it always started with quit drinking. And they had added things like quit drinking, clean up, get a job, be responsible, pay your bills. But it was always quit drinking. And so I came in here, those degrees I had, one of them was in psychology, one was in theology. I'd been a licensed therapist. I'd been a Methodist pastor. Those were two of those careers that kicked me out of, with good reason. But I did not know one thing about the illness of alcoholism. I usually say I'm grateful I got sober in Odessa, Texas, with all those oil field workers, pipeline workers and roughnecks, and a group of people that couldn't spell cat if you spotted them two letters. And I'm the guy that came in. I am so smart and I know so many things that the chances of me finding any kind of recovery are pretty remote. And those old boys, by the way, they were not that ignorant. But they had a very simple program. It was the one we find in the first 164 pages in our big book. I've looked back on it. I didn't get any psychobabble. I never got that stuff of you're powerless over people, places, and things. I remember that one because I heard it in a meeting one day, and I getting ready to say it, and Jerry said, "Don't you ever say that. You better get powerless over alcohol and stop there." I didn't get any of that. You've got to learn to forgive yourself before you can forgive others. The one that I love the most, you got to learn to love yourself before you love anyone else. And please, I'm not trying to attack anyone, but I damn near love myself to death. This is not a program of learning to love myself. It's a program of learning to get out of myself and be of service and start loving others. And what I discovered is what an old man from New Mexico said one day: the purpose of AA is not to love yourself. It's to discover yourself in the middle of a life that you love. And I can assure you that when I got here, I thought life was over, and the idea that I might ever have one I could love was way beyond me. But that old man didn't lie to me. And today I've got a life that I love, and I don't think about myself all that much. I don't say that I don't think about myself, but don't do it all that much the way I used to. But Jerry let me know that day. He said, "Gary, if you're coming in here and want to work with me to get your wife back, hit the door. If you're coming in here to get a good job, hit the door. If you're coming in here to get the IRS out, hit the door. I don't know what's going to happen with any of those things, and I won't make any kind of promise on those. They're going to be like a snowball rolling downhill. They're all going to have to roll all the way out. But what we'll promise you is that we've got a way to live where you'll never have to take another drink or do anything to change the way you feel from the neck up. And if you'll do what we do, it's going to be like a rock thrown in the middle of the pond. And those ripples will go out and touch those kids, and they'll touch those finances, and they'll touch every one of those consequences. And there'll be a resolution to each one of those that not only you can live with, but you'll be grateful for. And we don't know what that looks like, because the God we're going to introduce you to is not going to promise us outcomes that are meet our approval. He's going to promise some outcomes that will make those words that sounded impossible when I got here of "you will not regret the past nor wish to close the door on it." That's what'll happen. And I'll tell you that almost none of those things, those consequences, turned out in a way that prior to AA I would have said was favorable. And today I would say I'm so grateful for how they turned out. So if you're new here, things like a divorce or a DWI or going to jail or losing a job or another DWI or another trip to jail, those are all consequences. They are not symptoms of alcoholism. None of those things make me or you an alcoholic. Those things happen to lots of people that are not alcoholic. And look around this screen, and as you get to know people in your home group, many of those things never happen to people who are alcoholic. And I want to be very, very careful with that when I'm sharing in a meeting or when I'm telling my story, to not get so involved in this dramatic drunk log that three-fourths of the people can't identify with, and they're saying, "That never happened to me." And we have that cute little thing of saying "yet." And that may be true, but I would like to try and share and live in AA in such a way that they don't have to go experience anymore "yet." And so what he did for me is what I try to share in meetings is I needed to find out what was wrong with me, and I needed to find out what alcoholism was. And you and I talk about it all the time. Bill describes it in depth three different times in the first 50 pages. We're bodily and mentally different from our fellows. Now, what does that mean? Well, the bodily part, we all know about the allergy. Newcomers, the allergy of the body. You know, I remember not being very excited when I first heard that. But as my sponsor and as his sponsor and as the group of people I was getting sober with talked about it, I came to understand how different I am bodily. When Jerry was not trying to teach me, he wasn't telling me to read the big book and learn. He was trying to get me to look at my own life experience with alcohol and see if what the book was talking about was true in my life. And it came down to this question. He said, did you ever start drinking and drink more than you intended to drink when you started? Well, yeah, that may have happened once or twice, a night or a week. And then he got a little bit more specific. And he said, could you ever guarantee how much you were going to drink once you got started drinking? Don't tell me, yeah, I could do that sometime. Don't give me those things like, yeah, I could go out to lunch with some church members and have one drink and say, no more for me, that's all. And put on that facade. But I'm the one that knew I didn't stay with them very long, and I usually had a bottle under the seat. And when I got away from those people, I'm going to go drink the way I thought I wanted to. And in showing me how I was bodily different, Jerry began to show me out of my own life experience what Bill is writing about in that book. I never drank the way I wanted to. I drank the way I had to. And the delusion was that it's what I wanted to do. That mental difference. You find he starts talking about that on about page 20 in the book. And then he starts really hitting us. That mental difference is the really insidious part of alcoholism. The way I've shared this from time to time is everybody in this meeting has a brain. I don't care what anybody's ever told you. You've got a brain. But the brain is simply a physical organ, like the kidneys or anything else. And it's in the brain where that bodily difference is. You and I process ethyl alcohol differently than 90% of the people. And that's a physical thing. And there's nothing else wrong with our brain. And AA, God, nobody is going to do anything that will ever change my brain. I've not had a drink in 29 years and 6 months. If I start drinking again now, I will still have that allergy. And will, if not immediately, soon, I will be out of control again with my drinking. And all those years that I and the non-alcoholics around me thought that my problem was just drinking, had that been correct, we would have a one-step program. Quit. No need for the other 11. But that's where the mental difference comes in. And that's where I discovered, and if you're new, hear this and consider it a while. That's where I began to learn that my problem never was, never will be alcohol. My problem always was and always will be sobriety. I could not stand life sober even before I had my first drink. Bill calls it being maladjusted to life and in full flight from reality. And by the way, alcoholics aren't the only ones who are maladjusted to life. Lots of people out there are. That's one reason we have an Al-Anon program. Heck, a bunch of people marry people like us. If you think that's not maladjusted to life in full flight from reality, I don't know what is. You've got to look at your own experience. When I began to drink in the beginning, it's like the alcohol could reach inside of me wherever the knob was and give it a little turn, and I perceived myself to be adjusted. It worked. And I've heard enough of your stories over the years. You know, for me, in the beginning, it made me a party and fool and a ladies' man. And that was something I was desperately seeking before then, and alcohol seemed to make that possible. I've heard other stories where people had had trauma to such a degree, it allowed them to just blot that out. Others, it let them dream dreams. But in the beginning, it did something so much more powerful for me than it did to me, of why in the world would I not do it again? And I also discovered with his help that every one of you in this meeting, if you've got a desire chip and it says to thine own self be true, will have to know this is true for you. I've never met one of us that did not start lying about our drinking to somebody from the very first night out. And you're going to discover, if you're new, that most of the real lying you did in your life, if you're like I was to myself. There's another message of grace that runs throughout our program. And that grace is this: there's nobody to blame for alcoholism. Not me, not my daddy, not my background. And there are people, we never say that there are not people that when they were younger, that they weren't victims of something. Because they were. But what we're saying is that does not make you or I an alcoholic, because there are many who are victims of the same thing, and they're not alcoholics for two reasons. One of those is they don't have that brain that's different. They don't have the energy of the body. And the other is alcohol just did not give the kind of answer to them that it gave to me and you. In a very real way, alcohol and that first drunk I had when I was 19 years old, that was my first spiritual awakening in my life. Now, I would not name it that. I never did say alcohol is my God. But I was dependent upon alcohol to change the way I felt when I was stone cold dry and couldn't stand being sober. I'll get off of this for the new people by simply saying this. Step one, a horrible, horrible step. I'm powerless over alcohol means that if I drink, I'm screwed. My life is unmanageable means for me if I don't drink, I'm screwed. If all I accept is step one, I'm in trouble. Because when I don't drink for any period of time, I'm left in that horrible condition called being sober, with no solution to the squirrel cage that's constantly rolling around those two phrases that rule my life and I presume yours. To me, to me, to me. How could she do that to me? How could they do that to me? Look what the government's doing to me. Look at what, to me, to me. We call those resentments in here. And then suddenly the squirrel cage would stop and it'd roll in the other direction and it would be to them, to them, to them. How could I do that to my children? How could I do that to my mother? To them, to them. And you and I are not people who can live if we've got two me's and two them's constantly rolling around up here. I can't stand being sober. I don't have any way to manage those emotions. And I drink again out of a totally sober mind because I'm powerless over alcohol, whether I'm drinking it or not drinking it. And thank God Jerry did not teach that to me. He got me into my own life experience so I could see that that was my experience. And I'm grateful for sponsorship that just said to me that first week after I detoxed, we're going to be on you like birds on a June bug. These guys are going to be picking you up. You're going to be going to two or three meetings a day. They're going to be hauling you around. We're going to do everything we can to keep you busy and get you involved in the fellowship. But if you're the type of alcoholic I believe you are, after about 50 or 60 days, you won't be able to stand yourself sober and you'll drink again if you don't start right now the actions that we do in order to be changed. And so my sponsorship was not one that believed, well, we need to wait till he knows what he's doing. I never knew what I was doing. Thank God I had a sponsor that knew what he was doing. He was not interested in me getting it or learning it. He was interested in me doing it. If he had waited until I was ready, you'd certainly have another speaker. But it was in the middle of the second week that we got to page 44. And if you're new here, these are our two questions. You know, folks don't need to spend 2 years on step one. It's two questions. If when you honestly want to, you find you can't stop entirely. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you drink. Now, there's a key in that sentence before that, where he says, we hope you've learned something in the preceding chapters of alcoholism. And Jerry pointed out to me, that's a hint. You're supposed to read those preceding chapters. Read those chapters and listen to Bill Wilson a lot more than you're listening to some of the stuff that you might hear in the meeting. And get to those two questions. And if that be the case, then you're probably an alcoholic, which means you're suffering from an illness. And they let me know until you get sick, you're not going to get well. is you think it's a matter of willpower, or it's a sin, or it was bad luck, or it's poor character, you're in trouble, bud. You're not going to get well until you get sick. And we have the illness of alcoholism. And it is bodily illness, it is mental illness, but it's primarily spiritual. And I believe I had just enough left in me of my experience of being a pastor that I accepted immediately. And I never heard this before, about this being a spiritual illness. And I also, having been a therapist, I knew immediately alcoholism as we have it is not a therapeutic illness. It will not respond to a therapeutic answer. It is a spiritual illness, and it must have a spiritual answer. And that's what we have here. But I was still a smart guy that second week, and I've been reading the wall. And I see y'all talking about God all over that wall. And right as we got to that point, I told him, Jerry, we're going to have a little trouble here. I've been to one of the world's best seminaries. I was a franchisee for 14 years. I know everything there is to know about God. And thank God for a sponsor that was a simple man and did not want to have theological discussions with me. He just said, yeah, Gary, but you don't know God. And it's fairly obvious to me that you don't know how to read. And he had me read the step again. Came to believe that. It does not say came to believe in. I cannot tell you over the years how many hundreds of people I've heard that said, boy, I'm having trouble with step two. I just hadn't picked out my God yet. That has nothing to do with our second step. It simply says, came to believe that. Do you believe that you are powerless over alcohol? Yes. Do you believe that there's any power in the universe greater than you and greater than alcohol? And I said, sure. And he said, good, we're on step three. And we didn't go ahead and read the rest of the chapter to the agnostics. He took me to page 60 immediately. We redid the ABCs. Steps A and B is, and C is steps one and two. And right beneath that, it says, being convinced of what? The ABCs. We're now at step three. I've been to 500 meetings or more where people will say, well, what step three means to me is, and I tried that with Jerry, and he said, we don't care what it means to you. Keep reading the page. You're now at step three. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? He said, why would we care what you think it means? This is a story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered. And they didn't recover off of anything you believe. You get to recover off of what they did. And before my time gets away, I'll simply say we did it quickly. Step three has been very, very meaningful for me. You know, I always share this, that we had a lady, Nina. I love Nina to death. She had 10 or 12 years. Real enthusiastic, but every time she shared, she would stand up at the end and say, all you need is more God. And for me, it was like somebody running their fingernails over a chalkboard. If you're young on here, Google chalkboard. And I got into our third step, and I'll tell you, for me, there on page 62, I discovered I have never needed more God in my life, and I never will need more God. I always have and I always will need less me. If I can find some way to get me out of the way, all that's left is God. And that's not a one and done. That becomes a daily surrender. Step three is not a took step. It's a take step. These are not steps I took. These are steps I take. And there's a big difference. But I had to go ahead and ask him the question. I don't know what God's will for me is. And he said, nobody does. That's helpful to new people, isn't it? He said, why don't you go around the room and ask some of these guys, what is God's will? Every one of them will have a different answer. It's an old word we bring in here with us and we say it, but we've really never thought about what it is. Usually, it comes down to something that I want, and I just think it and pray it into being God's will, so I'll get my way. And after we had talked a little bit, he said, Gary, you know what happens after that step three when you make that decision? You know what God's will for an alcoholic is? It's called write your inventory. God's will for you is to do the next step. It's not do you get married or get divorced, do you get this job, or do the inventory. And then do the fifth step. And then go home after that, carefully reviewing the first five proposals and see if you've left anything out. And I'll tell you, when I did that and I reviewed what I'd written down and what Jerry and I had talked about, that's when I surrendered to step three. I'm not one of those people that had a great, exhilarating moment of freedom after doing the fifth step. I went home and I looked at what I'd written and I remember what I'd talked about. And I saw there in black and white, the very best I could have done with my life and what a mess it was. And I knew in that moment I was going to have the help of some kind of higher power to ever clean that up because I didn't have an answer for it. And thank God for sponsorship that kept reminding me. Three through nine is one step. If you're not planning to go on with 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, don't even bother doing your inventory. And I'm grateful for that. I had a sponsor that didn't believe, and he believed in what it said in the step. It didn't say whenever, it said wherever. He said, you know where those people are. You know who you owe money to. He had me make my eighth step list 2 days after the fifth step, and I found out that sucker had been listening because he had a bigger eight-step list than I did. And we sat down that first night. He gave me three-by-five cards with the first three on it and told me we'd get back next week and we'd do the next three. And the next week, we'd do the next three. And when I had everybody covered that was in the area where I was living, where I could see them face to face, we would stop until I got enough money together to travel to East Texas and other places where I could sit down in front of people and make direct demand. And all I'll tell you about the amends is you repay money with money, you repay love with love, and you repay hate with love. I owed a lot of money, and I'll tell new people it took me almost 17 years to finish making my financial amends. But I was free from them after about 6 months. The other thing I would say, I've had two sponsors. I've never written a gratitude list. I've never had a sponsor that had me do that. And I asked him about that once years ago, and he said, I don't know. I never had to write one. We just don't do that. But I want to share with you. I did write a gratitude list. It's called my eighth step. That eighth step list is my gratitude list. My children were on that list. My mother and dad and brother and those churches and friends and my family, all of that was on that eighth step list. And I take a look at this life that I love today and I see the story that Hallmark wouldn't buy. And I can read those ninth step promises and say to anybody today, I do not regret the past or wish to shut the door on. You know why? Because there's another line over there later in the book that says, our dark past, all that stuff I would have regretted, our dark past in God's hands becomes our greatest asset. With it, we can help others avert misery and death. Don't tell me I'm powerless over people. I can share my story with people, and there is a power that gets transferred to them. And those things with the kids and the family didn't just go away because I made amends, but every time I've sat down with another man and woman and shared my story, a little more falls off, and a little more fell off, and a little more fell off, and a little more fell off. And after about 18 or 20 years, I was clean. I discovered I know nothing about forgiveness. Our program talks very little about it, but I can tell you I know what it means to live forgiven. I don't know much about what it means to be forgiven, but I know what it means to live forgiven. It means when we had Christmas this year, and I'm over there with my daughter and her family and my granddaughter, and the children's mother and the children's aunts and uncles and all of that family that didn't like me very much back then. It's been many, many, many years where my daughter had to say, we'll put mother over here and daddy over here. She just says, y'all come. Because I found out in doing this program, that's not my ex-wife. That's my children's mother. That's not those in-laws. That's my children's grandparents, my children's aunts and uncles. People are going to become the names that I give. I'm here to play the role as he assigns it. It's the same roles after recovery, only now as he assigns it. Those used to be my kids. Today I'm their father. That used to be my brother. Today I'm his brother. And if I can just, with your help, try to be the best dad, the best brother, and the best employee I can be, what they do, how they act, is none of my business. But how I try to live out the values that you've given me in this program, that is my business. And none of us do it perfectly. Our time's going to run out, but I tell the people I sponsor all the time, if I get a C+, I've had a real good day. I've never met anybody on the A+ honor roll in Alcoholics Anonymous. C+ is a really good day for me. And if I'll do my spiritual hygiene with just half the effort that I do my physical hygiene, and I do that evening review each night. My God, people, it's an open book test. And I take my little C+ day in there to those maybe 10 minutes I spend with my higher power in the evening and take a look at my day and see how I can do better the next day. It's like he puts a little smiley face on there. And I can retire this day. I no longer wake up disturbed. I found a great miracle in here is 90% of the days I'm going to wake up with the same attitude I go to sleep with. And doing that 11th step at night I just wouldn't miss it no more than I'd miss taking a shower or wearing deodorant. Spiritual hygiene is more important than physical hygiene. And my hour is up. If you're new, when I got here, I could barely say my name. And now I could barely say my name without taking 15 minutes. But I'm glad y'all gave me a little time. It comes down, keep it simple. Trust God. Clean house and help others. God bless you and thank you.